This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham.
Some people say Mitt Romney's not a real Christian because he's Mormon. Some people say Barack Obama's not a real Christian because, well, that's a bit less clear. But just when did religion become such a big deal in presidential politics? If you're old enough, you may remember how JFK turned back concerns about his Catholicism, or Jimmy Carter's talk of lusting in his heart. But is it possible we've entered a whole new realm of religious fervor in judging who would become leader of the free world? Two Virginia authors who've studied this question are here with us. One says the religious right devised an ingenious strategy for its rise to prominence. The other, a former minister himself, wrote a book titled For God's Sake, Shut Up, which might give you some idea how he feels about religion taking over election campaigns. How do you feel about God and politics? Your chance to chime in is coming up right after the news. I'm Tom Graham, and this is Virginia Insight. Our focus this hour, God and politics. If you have thoughts or questions about that, you are certainly welcome to join in at 888-WMRA-TALK. That's 888-967-2825. Or post to us on Facebook, where we are listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. Here with me, two guests who have written extensively on our subject today. Brian Kaler has just had his most recent book re-released, now in paperback. It's titled Presidential Campaign Rhetoric in an Age of Confessional Politics. Brian, good to have you back in the Insight Studios.
Great. Glad to be here.
Also with us, Martin Cohen, who in his work as a political scientist has done much research on the rise of the religious right and co-authored the book The Party Decides, Presidential Nominations Before and After Reform. Marty, good to see you again.
Glad to be here, Tom.
Well, how important is religion in this current presidential election cycle, in your view, and how does that compare to previous campaigns for the White House in U.S. history? And Brian, let's start with you.
All right, great. Well, religion has played a large role throughout the primary process that we've seen happening for the last year, year and a half or more. Even though a lot of commentators early on said this was going to be an election focused on the economy, we kept seeing time and time again religion coming back as a main, if not the main topic. And we spent a month talking about contraception and religious liberty earlier this year in the campaign. And so religion has played a really large role as candidates have almost been in a quest to prove that they're a better, more spiritual, religious candidate than some of the Republican opponents. On the other hand, though, that's really not that different from the last few election cycles. You'd have to go back a few decades, I think, before we would find where religion was not playing a role similar to what we've seen this year. So in many ways, it's been more of the same, even though it's a campaign cycle where people thought the economy would dominate.
Marty, agree, disagree?
Yeah, I have to agree. I think the role of moral and cultural issues over the past few decades, such as abortion and gay rights and school prayer, has really maintained, despite the fact that it's in competition with economic downturns, wars, and even in elections where, as Brian said, the media says this shouldn't be about morals, it shouldn't be about religion, it generally is. And religious variables, religious indicators like church attendance and frequency of prayer have been consistently good predictors of how people will vote in presidential elections for a few decades now.
Marty, this book that you co-authored, I believe, with three other political scientists around the country called The Party Decides, it looks at what the changes were, I think, in the presidential nomination process before and after the reforms of the early 1970s?
Yes, that's right.
What did you find was the biggest change, and does it relate to the influence of religion in presidential election cycles?
Well, we found that whatever change did occur in the nomination process, it was short-lived. And that change was an increase in rank-and-file participation in the presidential primary process. And the main thesis of the book is that party insiders regained control of their nominating process rather quickly, such that their preferred candidate, based on elite endorsements, was successful in gaining the nomination in both parties every cycle from 1980 to 2000.
And who do you see as the party elites that, that regained this power?
We argue that it's a mixture of elected officials, interest group activists, for example, Christian conservatives. We find that these activists, these policy advocates, play an even greater role than was previously thought in terms of driving party strategy and party platforms than past researchers have suggested.
And I know, Marty Cohen, that as a political science, much of your research has been focused on the sort of ingenious strategies that you see for how the Christian right and religious conservatives have gained more and more influence over the past 20 years. So I want to ask you some about that, but I also want to remind our audience that you are most welcome to join the conversation at 888-WMRA-TALK or on Facebook, where right now all of our first questions are coming in. So let's go to this from Jennifer, who says, I am struck that people whose voices are loudest these days on religion and politics all seem to have the same ideas about which religious principles are most important. Today, a good Christian politician is supposed to be against abortion and against homosexuality. Was there ever a time when being a good Christian candidate for president meant your top priorities were helping the poor and loving your neighbor? Thank you, Jennifer.
Well, that's a great question. We clearly have had candidates who have run on those types of platforms. Eugene McCarthy, who ran for the Democratic nomination in 1968, drove President Lyndon Johnson out of the race, which was a pretty historic, had been a Catholic priest for a while, been studying to be a Catholic monk, and was definitely running on issues of war, primarily peace, anti-war, and was driven by his faith in a lot of that. On the other hand, that didn't end up winning out for him in that campaign cycle. So we do have these strains of political and religious leaders who are fighting for some of these other types of issues, social justice issues, but they don't seem to be dominating in recent days like those more social issues have been.
Yeah, I think you can also go back to, you know, the days of William Jennings Bryan and his use of religious imagery. Certainly he was a moralistic candidate in terms of temperance and things like that. But he also used his religious imagery most powerfully in an economic way, in a way that favored the poor rural farmers versus the Wall Street financiers of the time.
Well, following up with Jennifer's question, if I'm getting the essence of it, in the examples that you're giving, let's go, Brian, to yours and Gene McCarthy back in the 1960s. Was there really talk of religion as the driving force for the so-called be good to your neighbor flavor of Christianity? Or was that just a theme that was being talked about with no connection to religion, as opposed to today, where I think very clear whether Mr. Santorum is talking about his Catholic beliefs on contraception or other people are talking about their religious beliefs against abortion, that they are very much connecting it to what they say their religion teaches?
Well, I would actually say a lot of the activists in the 60s that were fighting for issues of fighting poverty, ending war, and so forth, were connecting it to their faith. I mean, Martin Luther King Jr., who was best known for civil rights work, was also joining the work to end the war in Vietnam, to fight inequality, income inequality and poverty. And he was a preacher by trade and very dramatically and frequently connected those issues to his faith. The issue, I guess, is that perspective or that strain of religion and politics has been dominated by other focus, but there's definitely been that connection there that you can find throughout American politics.
Brian Kaler, author of Presidential Campaign Rhetoric in an Age of Confessional Politics, is one of our guests. Martin Cohen, co-author of the book The Party Decides, is our other guest. My name, by the way, is Tom Graham. This is Virginia Insight. You can find us on Facebook, listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight, and you can find us by phone at 888-967-2825. Yes, we are in the middle of the May fundraiser, so that's a different number than the one we've been giving out for the past couple of days in order to make a financial contribution. That's an 800 number. The number we'd like you to use to join this conversation right now is 888-967-2825. But Nancy chose the Facebook route, so here's her post. She says, I believe that freedom of religion is our most basic human right. There is too much talk of religion in this election. Your religious views should govern how you run your own life, not someone else's. I just went to the website for the Touro Synagogue in Newport, Rhode Island. It's a national landmark and beacon for religious freedom. Posted on this site is George Washington's letter to the congregation on his views. We all should read it. I have to admit, Nancy, I'm not familiar with that letter, other than vaguely. I certainly couldn't quote it. Do either of you gentlemen know enough about it to tell us the essence?
I've heard it referenced before, but I'm more familiar with Thomas Jefferson and James Madison's work. They were a little bit more outspoken advocates for religious liberty, particularly here in Virginia, as well as fighting for the First Amendment. And they would definitely, I think, be troubled by the amount of religion that we have involved in politics and governance. Of U.S. presidents, they're among the couple that invoked religion the least during their times as president.
But, Brian, wouldn't you say that they're an exception to the rule then?
Oh, I definitely think that they're exception. They're also, shall we say, in this area, exceptional. Mm-hmm. But I think that even though they were an exception, they did win the debate, both in Virginia and in the national level, that we should have what we have at national level, First Amendment freedoms for religious liberty. There was a debate at that time. John Adams was on the other side. Some of the other founding fathers thought that we should still have state churches. And although they governed a little bit more exceptionally and a little bit more strict in their interpretation, they won philosophically the debate that we should have religious liberty for all people, especially for those who are of a minority or no faith.
And you do see the argument sort of get turned on its head by religious advocates in politics. They say, well, we have the freedom to express our religious beliefs, just like you might have the freedom to express any sort of reasoning behind your beliefs. And religion should not be excluded from the public square. We should not have to put our religion to the side, just like you don't have to put your ethics or morality that might not have anything to do with religion to the side when bringing it into politics.
Is it possible that it kind of depends on the political viewpoint being expressed, that if I significantly disagree with somebody on the liberal side who says we should do this because Christianity teaches this, I object to religion being involved in politics, but if it's a conservative that I agree with quoting the Bible, then I think, yay, religion should be in politics?
I think politics and ideology, almost always Trump principle.
We got some questions here to talk about in terms of specifics with what's going on with the current presidential campaign. So we're going to do that after a brief break. We invite you to call in the number you're going to hear in a moment to make a contribution, but stay tuned to talk more too.
Never been a sinner, I never sinned.
Norman Greenbaum reminding us that he's got a friend in Jesus in his song, A Spirit in the Sky. I'm curious to you listening, when you hear people talk, not in a song like that that's been so popular, but when you hear people talk in person about their religious beliefs and use a phrase like, Jesus is my friend, Jesus is my savior, if you feel uncomfortable or if you feel an opportunity to then engage with your religious beliefs. I realize God and politics are the things that we're never supposed to discuss in polite company, so we're encouraging you to do it today. The phone number, 888-WMRA-TALK, to contribute your voice to this conversation. We have here the author of the book, Presidential Campaign Rhetoric in an Age of Confessional Politics. It has just been released in paperback. Brian Kaler, professor of communications, is its author and one of our guests. Sitting next to him, professor of political science, Marty Cohen, who is co-author of the book, The Party Decides, Presidential Nominations Before and After Reform. To you who are listening, to you who are here in the studio, I'd love to have an answer to this question. Is a Mormon a Christian? Is Mitt Romney a Christian?
Well, Mitt Romney considers himself a Christian, as do Mormons in general. Some evangelical Christians do not believe Mormons are Christians. Some do. I think it's certainly an unsettled question. But I do think it matters in politics and does have an influence on what people think about Mitt Romney.
And I think Marty's right that it has impacted the Republican race, the questions about Romney's Mormonism. If you take away the opposition that Romney had from conservative evangelicals who distrusted him because of his Mormon faith, he would have locked up the nomination quite quickly. You know, he narrowly lost Iowa overall to Rick Santorum. But if you look at the gap between the support he got from white evangelicals and the support he got from non-evangelicals, there's a 24% difference, and meaning he dramatically beat Santorum among non-evangelicals. The only problem for him was evangelicals showed up in greater numbers to vote in that particular state. And if you look through the states, nearly every single state, Romney underperformed among evangelicals by double digits compared to what he did elsewhere. So clearly there were questions that his faith made him untrustworthy. I think the pastor of First Baptist Church Dallas explained this perspective, perspective the best when he said that he was going to vote for Rick Perry because he wanted to support a Christian over a member of a cult. And so that, I think, really demonstrates the perspective of a lot of conservative evangelicals. Now, that pastor has since said he's going to vote for Romney in the general election because he thinks a cult member is better than a Muslim, which, of course, raises some other religious questioning that's happened about President Obama.
Well, this is Mark.
And let's just clarify what you're saying about this particular evangelical preacher and that others in his philosophy sector accuse our current president of not being a Christian.
That's correct.
Of being a Muslim.
Yeah, and in fact, there was a poll done in March by the public policy polling that found that voters in some of the southern states like Alabama and Mississippi in the Republican primary, that a whopping 45% in Alabama or 52% in Mississippi thought that Obama was a Muslim. And it was in the teens that thought he was actually a Christian, despite his very clear and outspoken record for years about his personal Christian faith.
Brian Kaler, this poll was specifically among
the
Republicans who turned out to vote, not all Republicans in the state. Is that correct?
It came out just before the vote, but it was looking at Republicans who were planning to vote. Whether or not they all did, I don't know.
So you're looking at, in those states, some subset of Republicans. You're looking at those who are likely to be the most conservative, because in primaries, you tend to have the extremes turn out. You have the most conservatives turn out in Republican primaries, and you have the most liberals turn out in Democratic primaries. So we're not really thinking that 52% of all Republicans in any given state deny.
That's a good point. I mean, overall, polls usually have between 10 to 20% of all Americans, which obviously would probably be a little bit higher among Republicans in general, that think Obama is a Muslim. And the biggest issue about that is not just that they think he's a Muslim, but it's that, therefore, he shouldn't be president. And I think that's kind of the rub to it, is it's not just that they're incorrect in their facts, is that they are imposing this religious test that somehow would unqualify him. And it suggests that someone who actually was a Muslim doesn't have a prayer of winning.
So to you who are listening, my question is basically this. How important is religion to you in deciding who you want in the White House, or for that matter, any other elective office? Have you ever voted against someone because their religious beliefs were so different from your own? Please do call us at 888-WMRA-TALK. That's 888-967-2825. Or you can post to us on Facebook, where we are listed as Virginia Insight. Marty Cohen, I realize that none of us here are old enough to have been participating in presidential politics back in the 1950s. But in the late 50s, when there was a lot of concern about a Catholic standing a chance of getting the Democratic nomination for president, is it possible that that concern about JFK, is it all similar to concern today about Mitt Romney and being a Mormon, in that maybe back in the mid and late 1950s, a lot of people who were not Catholic had a misunderstanding of what it meant to be Catholic, and that from a Protestant's point of view, a Catholic wasn't really a Christian, as today, many Protestants apparently have the idea that being Mormon is not a Christian?
I think it's very similar. I think it's less troublesome for Romney than it was for Kennedy, and certainly much less troublesome than it was for Al Smith, if you want to go back another generation to 1928. I think right now what we see is that as important as religion is in presidential politics, partisanship is even more important. And I think that Republicans will vote for Romney because he's Republican more than his Mormonism. And that's why the problems that Brian mentioned in the primary season, I think, will be quickly papered over, as it was for that particular pastor, when we get to a general election. I mean, Al Smith lost in 1928 because he lost the South, which was reliably Democratic, but predominantly evangelical Christian. And many of those Southerners voted against their historic partisanship to vote for Herbert Hoover. That happened less in 1960, and it will happen even less in 2012.
Maybe we need some reflection on this from people in the audience who can share how they feel. But I am curious about how people decide that someone else is or is not a Christian. You know, even if I am a conservative member of an evangelical faith, it seems to me that I'm likely to have no problem today saying that people who are Congregationalists or Methodists or Episcopalian or Catholic are also Christian. And I would guess that the basic test for most Christians is, do you believe that Jesus Christ was divine? Do you believe that Jesus is God? And if you come from a faith that says yes, you're a Christian. And if you come from a faith that either equivocates or says no, you're not a Christian. When it comes to Mormons, they say yes, Jesus was divine, don't they?
They do. And to get the – I would disagree a little bit with what Marty was saying, and I'll use this to kind of answer your question. I actually think that part of the problem for Romney that's harder than it was for JFK is – people don't know Mormons personally as much as they did in 1959, 1960. You more likely know a Catholic. And so then when there were questions raised about, is there something weird or unusual or untrustworthy about a Catholic in 1960, most people could say, I've got a neighbor or I've got an acquaintance who's Catholic and they seem like a normal person. They seem just like me. Right? It's a little bit more easy to accept them. And in large swaths of the country, people don't know Mormons other than what they hear about them. And so I think that makes it a little bit harder to accept that unknown, and I think that makes it a little bit harder for Romney. And I also think Romney is hurt by the fact that culture has changed. JFK stepped forward and said, you shouldn't vote for or against me because of religion. Right? My personal faith shouldn't matter, which is an argument that if you can convince people of that, it doesn't matter if you're Catholic. And what Romney has to do and what he's been trying to do, and he did this in his December 2007 speech, is to say religion is important, religion should matter, and I love Jesus too. And that's a little bit of a harder test to pass because he's holding up the religious test, but then trying to assure us it's okay that he passed. And so I think the obstacle is a little bit stronger and harder for Romney to overcome.
Brian Kaler, author of Presidential Campaign Rhetoric in an Age of Confessional Politics, is one of our guests here on Virginia Insight. Marty Cohen, co-author of the book The Party Decides, is our other guest. I'm Tom Graham. Call coming in from Harrisonburg. Looks like it's from Matt. Matt, thank you for joining us. Your question or comment for our guests, please.
First off, how are you all doing this afternoon?
Thanks for calling.
Great. Good, thanks, Matt.
The first thing I wanted to bring up was there was in the last season of West Wing, Alan Alda's character made a comment about how religion shouldn't matter at all in politics. And that really struck a chord to me, and I wholeheartedly agree with that and have always felt that way. Your ethics and morals can be guided by anything other than religion, and if you agree with somebody on every point, except for they may not be the same religion as you, I don't see why that should prevent you from voting for them.
Matt, hold on just a second, because we have somebody else calling in who I think has a complementary point of view, and I'd like to get his before we ask our guests to respond to the two of you. So this is Rob in Broadway. Rob, thank you for joining us on Virginia Insight. Please go ahead with your perspective.
Thank you for the topic and the expertise. I was responding to the question of how a candidate's religious or professed religion affected voting, and as an independent, I was had always been impressed with John McCain and was ready to vote for Senator McCain up until the point I heard his vice presidential nominee speak. And her views, which were so extreme and to the right, just absolutely frightened me away.
And would you say it was because of Governor Palin's religious views that you were voting against that, two people?
The religion and social seems to be conflated together to a point where what, you know, is a hockey mom Christian by, you know, de facto wearing lipstick and not being a pit bull? Or, you know, it was the fact that there was very little coherence to, you know, the term Christian or Jesus was thrown around, but I never got any clear, you know, never once did I hear the Beatitudes.
Okay, so Rob and Matt, please hold on. We have one caller, gentleman, who says that religion should not be in consideration. You should vote for the person based on their other qualifications, no matter what their religion is. That should be fine. And then our second caller, Rob, saying, you know, I was really uncomfortable with the vice presidential candidate's religious points of view 4 years ago, and that's what made me decide to vote against the top candidate on the list, who is somebody who I used to support.
Well, to go back to Matt's point, his sort of you know, example of if you agree with everything some politician says but are a different religion and therefore don't vote for them based on that, I think that person is very unlikely to exist. I think religious beliefs matter so much to people, and they sort of run deep and touch on so many different political and social issues that it's very rare that you would agree with someone on the important issues and yet disagree with them dramatically on religion, whether it be the type of religion, the tradition, the denomination, or even more importantly, sort of the intensity with which you believe,
regardless let me back of the religion. Up, or ask you to back up on this, Marty, because I know that you grew up in the Jewish faith, and it made it, I suppose, it gave you a different kind of perspective in all of the research that you've done about conservative Christians over the years. But might it be your point of view then that if somebody running for president was Jewish, we had somebody running for vice president a few years ago who was Jewish, that somebody who was Christian would automatically not be able to vote for a Jewish person?
No, not at all. I mean, I think that, ideology and partisanship have become so strong that I believe that it's less about the religious tradition and more about the level of religious orthodoxy. Eric Cantor is Jewish, and he's obviously an extremely right-wing Republican, leader of the right wing in the House. I think, again, talking about the Republican candidates that were the most likely to win the nomination, Gingrich, Santorum, and Romney, here are three candidates, none of which are evangelical Christians. They're all, two were Catholic, one was Mormon, and they were getting the lion's share of the evangelical vote. So these days, I think it's less about defining someone as Christian or non-Christian and more about, you know, how religious are you? How much do you go to church? How frequently do you pray? Do you think the Bible is the literal word of God? And we find evidence statistically suggesting that the Orthodox in all three major traditions have tended to align themselves against the more secular or progressive members of those three major traditions.
Well, I would actually, though, say that Newt and Santorum were Catholic, but are also evangelical Catholics. They're a little bit of mixing both. I mean, Santorum was a few years ago on Time Magazine's list of top 25 evangelicals in the country. Newt was a Southern Baptist and then converted to Catholicism. So they do speak and work well with evangelicals.
Right, and just the fact that they exist and have been able to, you know, parlay that into a major political careers, I think also is, you know, evidence for the sort of melding of the traditions.
Right, and I think that's true. We definitely are seeing more and more Catholic evangelicals. But the issue they also see is even if conservatives might vote for Romney, they may not be as excited to vote for him. They may not get their friends to vote for him. They may not give money for his campaign because of his faith. And that could make the difference in a close election.
Rob and Matt, thank you so much. Great questions from both of you. We have some more Facebook postings here, including one from Carolyn. We'll get to that and maybe a question from you there if you get to the phone and dial in. We're going to be back in just a couple of minutes here on Virginia Insight. Leonard Cohen reminding us that we are back now to a discussion about God and politics. And if you want to join in that discussion, we need to make sure you have a different phone number than the number you were just given to use for the fundraiser. This number for a conversational contribution is 888-WMRA-TALK. That's 888-967-2825. You know, throughout much of the 1980s, in the early 1990s, there was a governor in New York who vetoed every effort to reinstate the death penalty there. A Catholic, he not only said capital punishment violated his religious beliefs, but he seemed to indicate that if his state legislature was ever able to override his vetoes, he would simply commute the sentence of anyone placed on death row. Now, you may remember this fellow because there had been at one time much talk about him running for president. His name was Mario Cuomo. So my question, if there was a candidate for president who said their religious beliefs would prevent them from doing something and you disagreed with them on that point, would that mean you could not vote for that person? Or might you be more likely to vote for this candidate because you admired his or her conviction to principle? Our phone lines are open at 888-WMRA-TALK. Here with me, politics watchers and researchers, Brian Kaler and Martin Cohen. What is it, Martin Cohen, that in your investigations of the success of the Christian conservative movement over the past 20 years, that you found about their strategy that was that kind of led to the success?
Well, I think it was a focus on the local level, predominantly as local as the school board, city council elections, focusing on state legislative races, low turnout, low information races where just a little bit of extra mobilization could make a huge difference. And using a lot of times using the infrastructure of the evangelical churches to get people out to vote, using political strategies such as passing out voter guides the Sunday before Election Day, literature drops, walking door to door, getting people to volunteer and using their passion and adding a little bit of sophistication in terms of the strategies necessary to mobilize at the local level and use that to win local elections and also to take over local Republican Party structures. And that was the key to them, I think, changing the Republican Party at the national level.
They started so small. They started in those local elections like school board elections and city council or town council elections where so few people turn out that their passion could kind of carry the day, and then they built on top of that?
Yes, I think so.
And was there some sort of national strategy directing them? I mean, you're talking about a period in the late 70s, late 80s, I think, when this was first becoming a predominant strategy for the Christian right. Those were the days of what, the Moral Majority?
Yeah, the Moral Majority was less focused on the grassroots locally. It was more the late 80s, early 90s, the Christian Coalition led by Ralph Reed that had sort of made it a fundamental piece of their strategy was to focus on the local level.
And as a result of this, starting small and building from there, that you would say that the Republican Party is completely different today than it was 20 years ago?
I would say 30 than it was 30 years ago, 30 to 40 years ago. Yeah, I mean, you know, the fact that Brian is talking about evangelicals as a distinct subset of the Republican Party would not have been talked about 40 years ago. Most of them would have either not voted or been Democratic. So that has been a huge change. And it's made essentially, it's given evangelical community within the Republican Party of almost a virtual veto over the presidential nominees. They couldn't veto Romney because they were split amongst other candidates. And that's to go back to a point Brian made earlier that Romney's so-called or saving grace, so to speak, was that there wasn't just one candidate against him at any point in time, or else that evangelical vote would have crushed him.
888-WMRA-TALK, our call-in number here on Virginia Insight. Tom in Waynesboro, thanks for calling in. Your question or comment for Marty Cohen and or Brian Kaler?
Well, I suppose it's both a question and a comment. I grew up, I was 14 when Kennedy ran for office, and we heard all this then. I mean, everything from he was going to have a crucifix behind his desk, and all this about the Pope would be running the country. I just think that we need to remember this country was founded on separation of church and state. And the more we talk about a person's religion, the more we're blinded to the fact that we have people out of work, we have all kinds of other issues, the environment, whatever you want to get into. But I think religion should take a big back seat because, I mean, if you should look at a man's record, if how he voted, and if you're a Republican or Democrat, vote for that. But don't be looking at somebody's back closet or how they worship or who they worship. I mean, if they're doing their job, that's between them and their personal God.
Tom, thanks so much for sharing your perspective with us. Next, we go to Stanton. Marty, you're on Virginia Insight. Your question or comment, please.
I kind of agree with the previous caller in the sense that a religion wouldn't keep me from voting for someone, no matter what it is. But extreme views on a religious line that influences policy, if they move too much, if it moves away from secularism, that does inhibit me from, supporting a candidate.
Marty, could you define what your perspective on extreme views? For example, if I was a vegetarian and I wanted to help persuade other people to be more vegetarian or at least eat less meat because of my religious beliefs, would that be an extreme view on your point?
Well,
yeah.
I think...
Yeah, that would be an extreme view. And I'm a vegetarian. But, yeah, that would be an extreme view.
Okay, the other Marty. Marty in the
studio. Yeah, I'm sorry about that. That was a better question for the other Marty, so I'll leave it.
Well, no, I'd be interested in your perspective as well. Tom has gone away now, but we still have Marty on the line, so it seems to me that they're both saying something similar, but I guess I got to wonder if it's relative. Is my sense of what somebody's extreme view that's religious-based likely to be different than what Marty's or Tom's or somebody else is?
This is Brian, and I think that there is an issue of difference, obviously, as how we define extreme. If I'm a conservative, then anything left of center could be more extreme, and vice versa. But I think getting back to what Tom was talking about with the
Tom
JFK,
the caller.
Yeah, Tom the caller. We have a lot of Toms and Martys today. Tom the caller was talking about JFK, and one of the points he made in his speech when he was fighting the anti-Catholic perceptions and in that campaign was that he would rather be talking about more important issues, unemployment, people who were hungry, and he lists a bunch of those issues. And I think that's a really important point, that when we allow religion to overtake the public, political, civic dialogue, then these more important issues do get pushed off to the side. And I think that's really what it comes down to, is when somebody is dominating the discussion to where they're other issues are being pushed out and cannot be considered, I think that's when it becomes problematic. But obviously, in a democracy, that we allow all people to vote, and we should allow every person to have a voice, regardless if we might think that they're extreme, as long as they're reciprocating that relationship and allowing people they disagree with to also have a say and to have their voice.
Marty and Tom, thank you both so much for your call. So here on Facebook, we have this one-liner from Carolyn, who says, quote, "The hubris of anyone thinking they know what God wants really bugs me." Brian, I know that the part of your work involves looking in depth and detail to data that comes from polling and surveys. Do you find Carolyn's attitude reflected among some of the electorate, that in addition to people who are motivated to vote certain ways because of their religion, there are other people who are motivated to vote the opposite way because they're turned off by religion?
Well, we didn't generally see that the last few decades. There was in March a poll by the Pew Research Center for the People and the Press and that found for the first time since they've been asking this question over the past 11 years, as whether or not religion is playing too much, too little, or the right amount in political expression by leaders. They found that for the first time, a plurality of Americans, 38%, said too much. And this was a pretty strong jump from a year and a half ago, when only 29% said too much, 37% said too little. And in both of those numbers, about a quarter said it's the right amount of religious rhetoric or expressions of religious faith and prayer by political leaders.
So we also have here on Facebook a comment from Chris who says, quote, "It's unfortunate when mainstream media take politicians' statements about their faith at their face value. Objectivity mitigates against analyzing the sincerity of such statements, but it often sounds as though reporters never heard of hypocrisy. We need to look for integrity in what our leaders do, not how they preach." And gentlemen, before you respond to what Chris has to say, let's hear what Ron from Augusta County, who's on the phone line with us, has to say. Ron, thanks for joining us on Virginia Insight. Your question or comment for Brian Kaler and or Martin Cohen, please.
Yes, sir. I'd just like to comment that religion does play a very important part of who I would vote for. I am a born-again Christian, and the values and the morals are very important to me.
I'm curious, Ron, would you be able to vote for somebody who you felt you liked what they stood for, but they were not Christian, they were Jewish, or they were Muslim?
As far as a Muslim or something like that, no, I would not vote for him, no.
Either of you have questions for Ron?
What about a Mormon? Or do you consider a Mormon to be Christian? That wouldn't be an issue.
I personally do not feel that a Mormon is a Christian. It's a lot of people that say that they're a Christian that don't follow the true teachings of the King James Bible, and I would have a problem voting for anyone that was out of that realm. I feel that that's very important in my duty as an American to vote. It's one nation under God, and there's only one God in my book. And I would only vote for someone that would serve him.
Ron, I don't know if you caught it, but earlier in the program, we heard some data from Brian Kaler that there are people who have similar views as yours on religion who say that they do not believe that the current president, Barack Obama, is a Christian. Do you have a view on that, whether or not you think President Obama is a Christian?
My personal opinion would be absolutely not. And my stance on that would be that he is for gay rights. And that is an abomination unto the Lord. He burnt Sodom and Gomorrah for that sin of sodomy. And if he was a true Christian, he would definitely be against that.
Ron, thank you so very much for taking the time to share your perspective with us. We've got maybe time for one more call, and we now have some open lines. So if you tried before and it was busy, this would be a good time to race to the phone and join in the conversation here with Brian Kaler and Martin Cohen. Phone number 888-WMRA-TALK. I'm Tom Graham. This is Virginia Insight. Gentlemen, before we run out of time, let's get into our prediction phase. To what degree do you think religion, now that we're pretty much past primary season, in the general election, is religion going to be a big deal? Are there new developments that are religion-based that you see coming? Or do you think that this is going to fade away now that it looks like the Republican nominating process is pretty much over? And, of course, we've always known who the Democratic nominee was going to be.
I think what's interesting is what came out today, which is that one of the major super PACs is planning to spend tens of millions of dollars to reintroduce Jeremiah Wright to the country. And that de facto means they're going to be talking about Barack Obama as a Christian, as someone who followed the black liberation theology of Jeremiah Wright. And it seems to me that the conservative movement is maybe going to have to decide which religious distortion they're going to try to foist on the American public, whether it's Obama is Muslim or whether he is someone who followed every word that Jeremiah Wright has ever spoken.
And I think adding on to that, we get a little bit from the last couple of responses we had from Ron and I think Chris about this idea of there seems to be conflation between someone's position on policies and then judging their faith. And so judging Obama's faith based on his position on an issue we may disagree with, or what Chris was writing, I think, on Facebook about some people was just saying, I'm a Christian, and then the media just reporting they're a religious candidate. Newt Gingrich kind of jumps to mind when he was talking about issues of hypocrisy, who can who can declare himself to be the family values candidate, and it doesn't matter necessarily how he's acting. It was all about what he was saying or the positions that he was holding. So we have a lot of this conflation of issues, and I think we're going to continue to see that. The attacks on Obama's faith, whether he's a Muslim, whether he's a black liberation, but therefore not really a good true Christian, or and or both somehow at the same time.
Brian Kaler, I got to ask this before we run out of time completely, and we've only got about a minute left. You're a former Baptist pastor. Your first book was titled For God's Sake, Shut Up. You write a blog still today that is titled For God's Sake, Shut Up. Explain as succinctly as you can what this view is that you're trying to get across about religious faith and politics and when you do or do not speak up.
Well, I part of the issue, the subtitle on the book, the first book, was this idea of
lessons. I have it here, lessons for Christians on how to speak effectively and when to remain silent.
Right.
So maybe that should be questioned. When do you shut up?
Yeah, sometimes, part of the argument was when we start talking in ways that hurt the cause, right? Getting sidetracked and on minor issues, making it too personal in our attacks, it actually drives people away. It's counterproductive. So that's a big part of it. I think clearly when we're talking about bringing your faith into the public square, that's allowed, that should be cherished, that should be encouraged. It's this idea of forcing others through government action to accept your religious beliefs. That's when it starts to become a little bit different issue. And so just to really sum up, I think the idea that I like is Baptist preacher and author Tony Campolo, who puts it something kind of like this. He said, the problem of mixing religion and politics is like mixing ice cream and manure. It doesn't hurt the manure, but it sure messes up the ice cream.
Our guests have been Brian Kaler, who teaches about campaign rhetoric in James Madison University's School of Communications, and whose latest book, Presidential Campaign Rhetoric in an Age of Confessional Politics, has just been released in paperback, as well as Marty Cohen, a political scientist who has done much research on the influence of the religious right and teaches about his findings at JMU. Gentlemen, thank you both so much for making time for us.
Thank you for having us.
You can find audio postings of Virginia Insight by going online to WMRA.org, then clicking on Programs, and then clicking on Insight Archives. And if you go to that page, you'll find links to more information about both of our guests. Thanks so much for tuning in for this edition. I'm Tom Graham. Hope we can get together again soon for more Insight.